Welcome back, The Lighter Side. I'm Joe Grammatico, along with Tom Kaliopoulos. How's it going?
Joseph, nice to see you again. Nice to hear from you. Another week.
Yeah.
Another week without hockey.
One more week, but according to the experts and the guys within the league, it might be coming back soon.
That's what I'm hearing. Yeah, I'm hearing there's a lot more discussion with the health people and different organizations. Looks like there could be some light at the end of the tunnel as far as an idea. So I'm kind of looking forward to seeing what they're going to be doing with that.
Yeah, they've been throwing out stuff since the beginning. They seem to be the most active as far as trying to get things up and running. So I heard, get training camp going here as early as June 1st and finish out the regular season and get into the playoffs by July.
Yeah, I remember talking with you when this whole pandemic started and the shutdown was just in its first week. And I did make a comment that this definitely, they need to have an idea and a game plan set by at least late April. And we're kind of moving in on that date right now. What is it, like the 28th right now or 20?
Yep.
What do we have?
28th at recording time.
Yeah, so I'm thinking two more days, and I'm thinking, my prognostication of that, I would like to think they're going to have some kind of plan, but they're dealing with a lot of the organizations, health organizations. They need to be talking to these people. It's very key that they do that in order for this to even be a reality. So they need to get this done. A game plan by the end of the month, and I'm guessing what do they plan on doing, Joe? Have it in four cities or two cities?
Yeah.
I'm not really sure how they plan on doing that.
I know they talked to the people in Minnesota. I don't recall the other venues, but they were talking with four or five different cities to try to play in some neutral sites. And I know they talked to some cities that don't even have NHL teams. I think they were up, North Dakota was a potential site, and up in Saskatchewan somewhere. So I think they're trying to find areas with low population, low outbreaks, where they can play all these games and almost make an NHL city or four NHL pop-up cities.
Yeah, you know what I'm thinking, Joe, is the funny thing about that is the rinks really have to be special if they're going to do this. I know North Dakota has a nice facility over there, but even then, saying that, I'm not sure. I mean, because you're talking about they got to have proper amenities for TV and broadcasting teams, and it's going to be more than just the norm. And
right.
they're going to have to figure it out, because you're going to have double the quality of a caliber of locker rooms so they can rotate teams through there, because I don't know how they're going to plan on do this, if it's just going to be the playoffs or for the regular season to finish that out as well. But they're going to have people sanitizing those rooms, and they're going to have it on a rotation basis when the teams aren't in there.
Mm-hmm.
So as it keeps going on, perhaps they're going to be in the other two rooms that aren't being utilized, that type of thing. So they're going to have double of whatever they had, possibly triple of whatever they had normal NHL game setting. That's the trick. But your point about being at a venue where there's a low populace of this virus being hot, there's going to have to be a situation well looked into as well.
Yeah. You got 12, I think most teams have 12 or 13 games left. You got, there's 31 teams now, so just figure that's, 15 games. We're talking 180 games they have to squeeze in four rinks. If they're going to do that over, figure training camp, I don't know, what are they going to give them, a week for a training camp? It takes you to the second
three
week
weeks,
of June.
Right? I heard 3 weeks.
3 weeks?
A mini camp, right. That's going to take 3 weeks. They're going to probably take a week to let them work out in their own facilities. First, they got to get authorization for that. And then go into like a 3 week kind of mini camp. So I mean they're doing this because they want to take care of their investments, and I totally get that. It's gonna be tricky though, because of, like we talked about in the past, where players' bodies are conditioned, mm-hmm. you know, to react a certain way, and this is normally, you know, geez, the playoffs are usually over in the time they're going to be starting this playoff run. Mm-hmm. Or even finishing the season. But to me, they have to get this completed by September, the end of September. Stanley Cup winner, everything.
Right.
That's my projected time frame. In order to salvage the current season, which is huge, because you don't want this thing to overlap and have it affect two seasons
right.
back to back. You know what I'm saying, Joe?
Yeah. Here's what I don't like about it. As much as I like hockey and I want to watch hockey, as a matter of fact, last night my wife had a meeting and kids were in bed, I had the whole place to myself, and I sat down and I wanted to watch hockey. And I was thinking, man, it'd be perfect if there was some playoff hockey on right now to be watching. But as much as I want to see that, I keep playing this out in my head, July and August, and I just keep envisioning just key players getting hurt, and there's not enough time for them to recover before next season. And then they're going to lose time in next season, whether, you know, it's a month, 2 months, half the season. For what? Just to squeeze in and finish out this season that's going to have asterisks by it anyway because of this 2 month break? I just don't like it. I'd rather they just call it a season.
No, it makes sense. I felt the same way too. You know, people keep bringing up the Red Wings as, you know, what are they? They probably can't be all for this because they're going to expend 2 months where they could meaningless hockey. But, you know, I look at it like, hey, they have to pay for their poor season somehow.
Right.
I mean, finish the season out. I have no compassion when people bring that kind of garbage up. The problem I have with it is it's when do you hold the draft?
Right.
They're talking about doing it like, I don't know, before the playoffs start or before the season, you know, ends. Mm-hmm. And how can you do that? Because you won't have a draft order. And then what do you do with the contingent draft picks that were created from teams, you know, from past trades or whatever?
Right.
So, like, Dustin Byfuglien is all, I'm finding out that they're not going to be signing him back in Winnipeg. So, I mean, he's already affected by it. That might end his career.
Right.
So, weird things like this are happening. It's a timing thing. They definitely need to do that draft after the regular season. So, I say play the regular season if they're going to do this. Mm-hmm. It only takes a couple days to draft, mm-hmm. you know, in the NHL, maybe a weekend.
Right.
A long weekend. So they will be able to do that still, have the draft orders, get all the contingency picks, you know, taken care of, and that type of stuff, and then start the playoffs. But they're going to have to modify that playoff somehow.
Right.
Because they have to get this done, as I said before, in September, by the end of September, so they can get a normal start date. You can't be going into late November starting the season. Because if they do that, that tells me they're just going to make the months more back-to-back games. You're going to pack more games in a week, and then you're talking about the stuff that you're fearful of is the injuries, mm-hmm. you know, coming up that could happen.
Right.
And they gotta guard themselves against that.
I'm surprised with Bettman that he's. I wonder if he's the one that's pushing this, because it would surprise me if he was, because we know how much he hates compacted schedules. That's his argument every 4 years when it comes to the Olympics, that they have to compact the schedules and players get hurt as a result of playing so many back-to-backs. And of course he throws in with the Olympic year, they go over and they're playing in the Olympics, then they get hurt there and it hurts his product. But even taking that out, we know he's not a fan of compacted schedules. So I'd be I'd be shocked if I if he was the one leading this charge, or he's got to be going along with the owners and, you know, the board of governors would want here.
Oh yeah, it's basically it's a combination of different groups, including the health organizations in both Canada and the United States. You need to talk with public health officials, because no matter what good idea they have, Joe, it's like you need the blessing of the public health officials. Now, the problem I have with that is, if you follow any kind of news, which I try to stay away from it with this whole pandemic, you're not getting facts proper from really many sources. So it's becoming a problem, and they're going to have to deal with that garbage as well in order to make the right decision, because it's going to come down to a value judgment. Is it going to be worth it? But the health officials are the ones that are going to drive the bus on this idea, whatever it may be. And then let's say this, Joe, what happens if they do pass this idea? Because they did speak to this doctor, this Isaac Bogosh guy. He's a leading expert in infectious diseases in Canada. He says that the possibility of resuming the season for the NHL in the summer could work. As long as the public health officials abide by it, he says it has legs. The whole idea and concept of what they're proposing now has legs. The problem is, you gotta go into the situation with the facts. You know, gotta have a significant reduction in cases before it'll even happen. You gotta have proper tracing, evidence sources that prove the disease is under control throughout both countries. In North America right now, like I just mentioned, between Canada and the U.S., they don't have this yet. They don't have this yet. So I think in 2 months, they're banking on it becoming, the facts becoming a little more clear by May, which is when they're going to have to know all this stuff. So that's going to be a big indicator, no matter getting venues or whatever and all this other stuff, you know, coming down the pipe. You know, that's all fine and dandy, but if they don't have all that stuff when it comes to this illness structured and properly in place, it's all a moot point, you know?
Right. And we know one thing I do like, and take away what I said about, you know, preferring that they don't do this. One thing I do like, and I think could work out really well for the NHL, especially if they get the go ahead and they get this training camp and they get things moving, there's potential for hockey, you know, to be the only sport on. And, you know, for it being, you know, kind of the smallest of the major sports in North America, that's huge, because people will watch because it's the only thing on. So they could really key in and win some fans out of this. People that wouldn't normally watch hockey just because it's the only thing that's on TV, and people are craving sports right now.
Absolutely. Look at, they set records for the football draft there that was streaming
right
Thursday, on Friday and Saturday. Set records for most people watching the draft, and it's mainly what you just mentioned. It's the thirst for seeing sports of any capacity on the television, and I believe it would market the NHL even better. And which is funny, they're also coming up with this this connection with the fans, maybe a link to stay connected with the fans, and it was sparked from a Gretzky Ovi matchup on gaming.
Okay.
I guess they're playing NHL gaming challenge is what they're calling it, and they're going to have two players from each team representing throughout the league.
Okay.
And they're basically going to play video games, the NHL 2020 or 2019 or whatever it is, and they're going to be having challenges that raises money for the COVID-19 relief efforts. And they mainly are doing this just to keep connection with the fans. It's not a bad idea.
Right.
They're actually going to televise some of this stuff. And believe it or not, people will watch it.
Oh, for sure.
Because they're going to see the players interacting. So they don't normally get to see players like that. Much like they're doing on the internet. You know, you go on some like Sportsnet or something, and they have these little Zoom kind of episodes where they have four different players from different cities, and they're kind of talking, chirping each other, that type of thing. you know, and the host is asking them questions, and it's just stuff that you pick the player's brains. You normally don't get to hear from. But it's popular, and they're looking to have the same concept with this video game challenge, and it's for a good cause. So, but mainly it's that link. They got to keep that link going, especially like you mentioned. It's out of the four majors, it's probably the least followed because it's a niche sport, more or less. And it's funny you mentioned it too, Joe. It's like, I haven't heard much from basketball or baseball and how they plan on coming back. Have you?
No, it seems to be hockey is in the news, really leading this effort, and I think everyone else is, you know, just sitting back, letting them put in the work, and they can kind of follow the NHL's lead here.
I think that's what it seems.
They've been the hungriest to get back to action and kind of, you know, like I said, be the staple for the lead example for what everyone else is going to do, because it's pretty evident, you know, all the sports are going to be, they're going to be back in some capacity at some time and without fans to start it off. And I think we'll see how it goes with the NHL. They're really going to be the guinea pig on this one. And I mean, everyone's going to go back to baseball and football and basketball when those come back on. I don't think they have as much to lose as the NHL, which might be a reason why they're pushing so hard. And it was a great season this year all around. So it really stinks that we're going through this and being without hockey, because it was a really, really great year to see.
Yeah, a lot of good young talent and starting to flourish. Some of these guys that came into the league 3 years ago are becoming mature professionals now. And you would always like to see a culmination of a nice Stanley Cup, two-month Stanley Cup season that usually is the bread and butter and, you know, the icing on the cake, so to speak, for an NHL season, because it is the best playoffs by far of any of the four majors. And, you know, I'm pretty much a sports fan of most of the four majors. Kind of lost basketball since the late 80s, but as far as the competitiveness and the players, there's no real sincere sport like hockey when it comes to this time of year, and as the players, you know, sacking out and giving all for a victory and laying it all out on the line. I mean, you see it. It's just, it's not phony. So that's something I miss, and we'll see what happens, Joe. The big question for me, and I'll end it with this, is for you, is what happens if they do get this all running and they get all the testing and all these judgments from the medical field, but yet somebody during the tournament or something tests positive? Does this topple the entire objective?
Right. Well, then
I would think not.
Yeah, I don't know. You definitely would get the other three leagues pointing the finger, saying this is why they didn't do it, because there was too big of a risk to the players. They would,
yeah,
they'd point the finger.
Yeah, I'm thinking they would probably do that, but I don't think that would be a problem, even if somebody does test, a random person tests positive, if they have the system in place,
right,
with the proper protocol, like to identify that person and then get them in isolation, and then you have lots of testing, which is becoming more prevalent now. I've been seeing press conferences and stuff and driving about town when I'm out. There's more places to get tested now and everything, so I would hope that they had testing there and an easy way to test to be able to keep it under control. Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's doable, but like I said, I'm going to go back to my statement. It's got to be completed. There's got to be somebody raising that cup by the end of September,
right?
No, later.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, because, like you said, you know, what does happen? Does just that player get quarantined for which essentially would be the rest of the playoffs, probably 2 weeks? It'd be at least an entire round, the way they'd have to cram it in.
Right.
Does the whole team get quarantined and their games are delayed? The team that they played that night, are they delayed as well? Or
how do you hide that injury, Joe? You know, is it an upper body injury or a lower body?
Right.
You know.
Right.
You know, just to kind of make light of it. But, right. Yeah, it's a good question. But, That's the tricky thing about all this, but I do like the fact the NHL is leading the charge. Good on them, and you know, people want to see the sport back. They know the value of playoff hockey and what it does for the sport. So,
yeah, I'll be interested to see what the format will be. I haven't figured out timeline yet. It's got to be some mixture of 3-3, 5-7, or 3-5, 5-7, depending on the streak. They got to have the Stanley Cup final round be 7 games, but they're going to have to be short. I don't know if they'll do the first 3 rounds, just 3 game series, or like basketball used to do. I think basketball was 3-5-7.
Yeah, and what? But Joe, basically, too, is another issue is they need to be putting these, picking these rinks based on divisional layout. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm sure a team on the West Coast, if there is any, there's probably not going to be many, but I'm talking Vancouver and all of them are on the bubble that might make the playoffs, Calgary or what have you, Edmonton. I mean, they don't want to be playing these games, you know, in a different area. But then again, they're going to be targeted there. They're going to be stationed there in a hotel for probably the duration of the...
Right.
So, yeah.
They're probably not going to have to travel out for that playoff round.
Right. Yeah. I didn't think about that. But, like I said, we'll see what happens. I mean, it's going to be a totally different discipline, too. And I guess whatever team adjusts and makes those mental adjustments, because it is unique, because if you're a creature of habit, man, you're going to be in trouble, because this is basically, and maybe they're getting broken in with this stay-at-home stuff for the last month and a half or what have you, but that's going to be a different discipline playing in a hotel. It's probably much like an Olympic thing where you're sitting, you know, 2-3 weeks in the Olympic Village, and you go to a venue to play the games. It's probably going to be more of that type of setting.
Yeah, and what about, you know, we talked about it in one of the previous shows here, the playoffs and how tricky they can be, and we've used the Red Wings as examples. It's not uncommon in the playoffs in hockey for the underdog team to steal the first 2 games in a series. So can you imagine you got Boston, a 1 seed, playing whoever the 8th seed ends up being, in a 3-game elimination for round 1, and the other team adapts quicker and wins the first 2 games, and just like that, the best team in the league's done?
It's just a different intangible. Yeah, yeah. It's something. That's why I don't like the idea of them letting everybody, all 31 teams or however many there are, into a playoff pool, because, you know, if they do that, they're going to end up having to do best 2 out of 3 probably scenario at the beginning, just to fit it all in. And I just can't see a team like Detroit, you know, and, you know, like we said, what's the old saying, even a blind squirrel finds a nut once in a while.
Right.
I can't see Detroit getting rewarded for playing the way they have all year. And there's a few other teams, all the California teams have had horrible seasons too. It's like, there's no way these people should even be thinking about, you know, starting fresh and just play it the last 12 games, you know. Too bad, Detroit, you got to bite the bullet on that one, as well as the other teams that are mathematically eliminated. You put yourself in that position, too bad. Just play your games out, because that's what you're contractually supposed to do as a professional anyway. So, that being said, they're going to have to figure it out, get through that regular season. I would hold the draft in between until they figured out the playoff seedings, and then go from there. But you could fit it all in. It's just a matter of it's got to happen, though. Right. They're going to have to get together with these health organizations from in both countries and figure it out.
Right.
So.
Well, they have a plan. Anyway. They have a plan, and they'll be back in some capacity here. Fairly short time, so we'll sit and watch. But, you mentioned Detroit, and one guy who's not going to be back next season, and that's goalie Jimmy Howard. He's been first appeared as a Wings draft pick, 64th overall, 2003. First appeared in games for the Wings in the 2005-2006 season. He put up over 240 wins in his career as a Red Wing, over 912 save percentage. He had a historically bad season this season. I was just notified a couple days ago that there's no plans on extending his contract extending a contract to him in this upcoming offseason. So Jimmy Howard's going to be out. What are your thoughts on Jimmy, aging goalie? Where does he go from here? Is there an opportunity for him to play somewhere else in this league, or are we going to see the last of him in these last 12 games that are coming up?
Well, Joe, to be honest with you, I've not been a fan of Jimmy Howard probably since 2014. And the main reason is every training camp, I'm talking every training camp, they show pictures of this guy at their traditional golf outing in Traverse City, and maybe a few celebrity softball games in the summer, maybe a couple months prior to that. And this guy is just blown out. He's not even in shape. I'm thinking about all the injuries he's had with his knees, with his groins. And the last thing you want to be doing when you're having those type of injuries later in your career is overweight. And I'm amazed that they must never have come down on him. I've been on teams, Joe, where players had weight issues. It was part of their contract where they had to stay a certain amount of weight. They had trouble keeping it off in the off season, what have you, and they got fined a dollar amount every pound they were over a suggested amount that the team and him, the players, settled on.
Right.
Surprised this was never, excuse me, maybe part of his contractual obligation, because technically he always came into shape or came into camp out of shape, used the training camp to get in shape, and then he would always have early season injuries. It's very bothersome. I was really bothered by that this past year when Iserman came in, thinking that he would put a stop to that.
Right.
Especially knowing the goaltending situation in Detroit, how unsettled it is with prospects not kind of developing the way they want them to that are currently in the AHL or in the Wings organization, or guys they've drafted that are still over in Europe. They're just not panning out. So you've got kind of a patchwork situation going on there. Bernier, I'm happy with him. He's one of the bright spots from last year's team, or this year, the last 2 years, really. You can't argue that. He's probably one of the few bright spots, probably three or four bright spots on this Red Wing team this past year. And I think they're set there as for him as a backup. Now, the key, Joe, is I'm ecstatic that they're not bringing Howard back. Okay, that's for first and foremost. But who are they gonna bring in?
Right.
I mean, I know there's a lot of options out there because goalies are kind of like running backs in the NFL now. It's almost done by committee now.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to still have that number one guy who's going to take 2/3 of the bulk of the work. And there's some guys out there, Joe, that, you know, are in positions to get out of that backup role they've been kind of stereotyped with their whole career, but they're going to command a high dollar amount. Now, the good thing about Detroit is they're going to have some salary cap money to work with, more so than other teams.
Right.
So who are some of the guys that you were looking at, Joe?
Well, I did. They wrote an article in the local Detroit News here of five guys that will be available, or likely will be available, whenever free agency starts. That could be prime candidates. I'll give you the five. You tell me who you like the most after we go through them. And maybe you got somebody that's not on this list that you think will be available. But the first guy that they mentioned was Cam Talbot from Calgary. He had a good season in Calgary, save percentage at .919. 263 goals against average. He's looking for a starter job, so he's indicated he won't be back in Calgary. He's 32 years old. He's had some decent decent seasons, throughout his tenure in the league. What are your thoughts on Cam being a fit in Detroit?
I like Cam Talbot, and here's the reason why. He had an off couple years, and then last year he kind of rebounded, although his win-loss record wasn't astounding. I mean, he was like 12-10-2 or something like that. Not numbers that you could sit there and say, wow, you know, that's noteworthy. But I believe, based on the fact that he won't command a high dollar amount, and the fact that he's played in the league a while, he's had some good runs, I think he might be a good guy to maybe plug into number one. However, who else you got on the list, Joe?
The next guy that they mentioned had the best season of these five goalies as the backup, and he's been a career backup, but he was the backup in Dallas last season, Anton Kubotin. He's 33. He was 16-8 with a .222 goals against average and a .930 save percentage. Now, that's on a pretty good Dallas team. I struggle, you know, as a career backup, is he better than Bernier? Could he be the starter? He's 33 and has never been a starter in his career, so that this one scares me on the list.
Well, and, you know, anybody on this list, I think I saw the other four guys as well, other three guys, including Talbot, but, you know, that's going to be the question for all these guys. I mean, can they handle a regular load? That's why I was kind of looking at guys maybe off this list in free agent market. They're going to command a bigger price tag, but at least you know what you're getting. But I would probably go with, out of the two that you mentioned so far, we'll go process of elimination. I'll take the Dallas goalie, Anton, over Talbot right now.
Okay, the next guy is an older guy at 34. He had 18 wins this season on the best team in the league, the Boston Bruins. He seems to be real consistent, Yaroslav Halak, throughout his career, no matter what team he's played for. And you could argue that he pushes Tuukka Rask to be better just due to his consistency. The question is, would Halak want to play on a bad team at this point in his career?
Yeah, I was going to tell you that's probably a deal breaker based on, you know, the team he's coming from. He seemed to be situated pretty nice and in a good position as the backup to Tuukka Rask. They complement each other well. You know, but I don't think he wants to be part of a rebuild, so we'll just say that's a long shot for him to even want to come here. His price tag isn't that bad, 2.75 mil, so, but anybody who comes here is going to, the Wings are going to have to push probably 5 mil and up. What do you think about that, Joe? They're probably a fair price?
Yeah.
For any goalie coming here to be a starter?
Yeah, if they're going to pay someone to be a starter, they're going to have to probably take whatever Jimmy's salary is and put a little bump on that. Actually, I don't remember where he's at this season.
Who's that, Halak?
No, I don't know what Howard's cap hit was, if he was 4 or 5, but I'm thinking they're probably going to have to replace that and bump a little bit up to get a decent starter to come to town.
Yeah, I think Howard's over 5 mil, so I'm like, it's ridiculous, but for what we were getting the last 6 years, that's another bad Kenny Holland contract for sure.
Yeah, let me see if I can.
That's rearing its ugly head. But
let me see if I can. Let's find his cap hit.
Who was the second guy from Dallas to Kudobin?
Yeah, Kudobin.
I like him out of the three we mentioned so far, and the only reason Halak, you might remember too, Joe. He's 34 years old.
Right.
I mean, what are you really going to offer that guy? These people, I think goalies are going to probably want a 5-year contract. Some of these guys, maybe 3 to 5. I'm guessing he might want a 3. Or he could ask for a 5 just because of his age. I don't see him playing until 39.
Right. Yeah, I don't. And Yzerman's looking more, I think, on short-term deals. I think he's hoping either a goalie he drafts or someone coming through the system. And I think he's waiting to make that big move till the wings are a little bit better. So he's probably looking to 2 to 3 year contract, 3 at the most for whoever he brings in.
We're going to talk about that after you, a few more of these guys. I'm going to bring up some other options he might be thinking of, just trying to get into his head a little bit.
Yeah, the next guy is the one I like the least on the list, another 34-year-old goalie, Thomas Greiss. He had a good year in New York with the Islanders, but if you look through his stats, it's actually the worst season that he's had since he's been with the Islanders. So 34 on a decent Islander team, to me that's an indication that he's on the wrong side of the curve at this point in his career, and no sense in him coming to Detroit. But he'd be a step up as far as the goalie tandem goes from what we've had the past two seasons.
Yes, he would be. Like you said, though, he's on the downside of anything we're trying to do here. He'd be more suited for a team that's a little more established already between the pipes, and maybe be a complimentary guy. I guess that's just where he falls right now.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, his agent himself probably would say, you know, beg to differ on that, but... You know, stats don't lie. I mean, I think he is on the downside, and you know, he's always had a good complimentary goaltender as part of his tandem with Leitner.
Yep.
Those two were a nice tandem. Well, so who's on that? Part of the guys.
Yeah, the last one we got. The last one on the list is probably a long shot, 30-year-old Jacob Markstrom from Vancouver. He's indicated that he wants to stay in Vancouver, that he's a guy that could command some money, and money that the Canucks probably won't have, or they'd be forced to make a move to keep him. And a team like Detroit that has the cap space, if this guy does make it to free agency and isn't signed before whatever that first day is, you know, he could make things really, or a team like Detroit could make things really difficult for Vancouver to get Markstrom to sign.
Yeah, I think based on that, anytime you get a player that, you know, has free agent leverage, and the guy's had some good years, so he's a bona fide goalie. But anytime you hear a player say they don't want to leave their current situation, I mean, that's going to tell you a lot, because they're taking that leverage card away for their own situation.
Right.
Which tells you a lot. I personally wouldn't want a player like that unless he's sold on making a change and being challenged. And it doesn't sound like, you know, he's a 30-year-old guy. He's proven. He's a $3.67 million goalie right now, and he's going to command another $2 million on top of that. But is his heart going to want to be here? You know, I don't know. Does he want to face 35, you know, 40 shots a night and 20 of them being quality?
Right.
You know, some goalies thrive in that. And I used to play with a guy named Vince Riendo, and juniors too. And he always seemed better facing more shots, playing more games. You know, he always seemed to thrive on that. So some goalies will relish in that and use that as a, I'd like to go there. I need the work.
Right.
Take it as a challenge.
Right.
Not so sure this guy, you know, wants to do that. He's not in the right frame of mind to do that, especially since he's already lobbied to come back to his team. He's going to put his agent in a real predicament trying to get money out of his current team for the upcoming season, but that's the bet he made, so he's going to have to lie in it. He would fit in here, but my question would be, would his head and heart be into it? So I'm going to say no on that one.
Okay, so the five, you're with Kubotin, giving him his chance to be a starter.
And Talbot as a second one, but I have a couple guys, Joe, that I would like to throw at you.
All right.
As maybe other options. We spoke of one already, Liner. He's sitting over in Vegas right now behind a pretty good goalie, Hall of Famer Fleury, Marc-Andre Fleury, and I can't see Lahner being a 29-year-old backup. So what are your thoughts on that? He's currently at a $5 million price tag, too, for a backup goalie.
Yeah, he's had some decent seasons, but I don't know what the deal is, why he's bounced around so much the last few seasons.
Well, he's got personal issues, Joe. I think he had an addiction with alcohol at one time, and then he's obviously got some other issues with anxieties and he was suicidal or something, wasn't he?
Yeah, that rings a bell. I think you're right. I think he took a leave when he was in Chicago. Was that? No, that was this year. Was it this? Yeah, maybe it was in Buffalo. I remember him taking a leave.
It could have been to Buffalo because he ended up going over there with Leguan, but from whoever. But I know he was comeback player of the year when he had that great year with the Isles a couple of years ago in that long playoff run they had. So he pretty much defied all the odds. He's always been a guy who's been a real aggressive goalie. He's toned down quite a bit. You know, maybe it's because he's getting his personal life in control.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of segued onto his ice demeanor too. But he's still a good backstopper. He's a 6'4" guy who moves really good. I think he moves like a 5'10" goalie. Kind of real athletic. He's a butterfly style. I think he's the perfect guy in age for a Detroit team. And you could offer a guy like that 5-year contract, and
right,
he'd be a nice complement with Bernier for sure. I can see him working out, and then Braden Holtby's out there too, at a little bit, probably the highest price free agent, $6.1 million price tag. He's 30-year older, but we all know what he's done before in Washington. He's a Cup winner, so that could lend a lot of credence in a Red Wing uniform as well. Out of those four, I'd probably say the most feasible one would be the kid in Dallas or Talbot, you know, coming over here. But, you know, what about some of these new prospects coming up in the draft, Joe? What about Yzerman pulling a fast one if we don't get that number one pick and taking Askarov?
Yeah, that would be – yeah, I've thought about that. He's picked a goalie early on in the draft before. It doesn't seem to be the thing
with
to
Tampa?
Do. Yeah, he did it in Tampa. I don't remember. I don't think Vasilevsky. Well, he took Vasilevsky. That was, I think, when we traded. Was it Kyle Quincy that we gave up a first round pick for? So that was a late. It was a late first round pick, but I think he took. I'm gonna have to go back now and look at his draft history to see who he took.
Kyle Quincy went to L.A., didn't he, from Detroit?
Yeah, so but when we acquired him. Let's see.
I don't know, but I know Yzerman, he's been known to do some odd things in the draft, and if you do get this Askarov kid, it's got to be with the intent of just plugging him right in. I'm not so sure about that. You know, he's a butterfly goalie. I think we're going to be talking about him in another show coming up with draft picks and stuff from 6 to 10 slots. So, but that is an option for Detroit if they wanted to bite the bullet and just, you know, build and rebuild from top to bottom.
Yeah.
Usually you have a seven. I think Bernier could be a nice settling force enough to make that work. But it would just kill me for Detroit to take a goalie right now, knowing that they,
right,
you know, it's not a sexy pick,
nope,
you know. But the kid is being compared to Carey Price, which that could ail you, cure a lot of what ails you as far as those tight games.
Right.
But this kid was like, what, 18 years old? He's a young 18, I think, now.
Yeah, he's not too old. He's still 17. He won't be 18 until June.
Yeah, that's kind of a lot of pressure to put on a kid. So, you know, I'm thinking maybe move toward a veteran guy. But like I said, if we don't get that first pick, I mean, there's a guy I would pick probably before Drysdale. We talked to, or not Drysdale. who was the defenseman that I said last week?
Yeah, Drysdale's the defenseman.
Yeah, Drysdale.
Yeah, well, he's the guy I would probably take before this goalie. But, yeah, so I'm just thinking. And then there's a few other guys that are later in the draft, like the American kid, Aiden Campbell, played in the O. Ty Austin, who played in the O. Owen Bennett, another OHL goalie. You got Arthur
Akimov, something like that.
Yeah. And he's played in the pro leagues overseas, and you got Oliver Adam, who came out of the Q. But all those guys, there's no way they're going to pop right into number one. So, Yzerman's got his work cut out for him there. I don't know, what he's going to do. But that, if he thought Askarov was the real deal, like many others do, he might pull another shocker this draft, like he did last year.
Right.
With Mullins.
Yeah, I think for what he's – yeah, I feel like even – yeah, I don't think the Wings are in a position to put a young goalie in. And I think that we'd be looking at more of a two-year contract-type goalie. So I think they're – I think that someone like Halak or Talbot is going to be more in Yzerman's wheelhouse for this upcoming offseason.
What do you think, Joe?
I'll go – I'd like to see Talbot. I'd like to see them go after Talbot first and split time with Bernier and see which one of the two of them takes the starter job. That's what I... Yeah,
you think Bernier has... I likened it to... made a football reference earlier with the goaltending situations becoming like a running back situation. All these running backs are like labeled now based on workload. Is he a 25 carry guy, as opposed to a 10 carry guy? My question would be to you is Bernier a guy who can play 60 games in a regular season?
Yeah, I think he can play.
That's the question.
Right. I think he played better in his time with Detroit when he was playing more, when they were rotating nights. I don't know if you remember his last season when they were rotating games, he was playing really bad. And then when Jimmy got hurt, he seemed to step his game up.
So. Yeah, that's like that Vince Riendeau example I made. Riendeau always relished the back-to-back-to-back-to-back games, and he liked the heavy workload. He seemed to get better. His personality dictated it. He was a real aloof guy otherwise. Guys like that that have that personality, a lot of NHL goalies could be like that too, like that flaky presence about them. Because you really need to, I used to tell my young goalies at the youth levels, because a lot of them had trouble with concentration. And, if my teams were mainly coached to be puck possession teams, so there's a lot of times when, my teams would have puck possession, they would zone out.
Right.
So my thing with them was, okay, you have to trick yourself to keep tracking the puck, to stay focused. So how do you do that, coach? I'd tell them, do play-by-play in your head like an announcer would do, like a Mickey Redman or a Dave Strader or Ken Cal or whatever. Do the play-by-play in your head. That'll keep you focused on the puck. And it's just a nice little mental trick to do. But goalies that play often, that need to play often, probably have that poor quality in their game. And they really struggle with it, no matter NHL level or what have you. But it's hard to stay focused. It's tiring to stay focused for as long as they're out there between the pipes just standing there, especially if your team carries the play. And then you got to come down and face that odd chance every 5 minutes or what have you. Now, they're not going to have that problem with this Detroit team, obviously.
Right. Do you remember how bored Hasek used to get when he came to Detroit?
Oh, yeah.
He was
complained about
after playing 50, or getting 50 shots a night and playing 70 games a year in Buffalo. He'd come over he'd face 13 shots. And I remember him just coming out of the net to play the puck for no reason and yelling at the TV for him to get back in net because he was so bored.
Well, that's part of it. It's like these guys have to have a – I mean, there's these little intangibles within a position that the armchair people don't realize – You know, and goaltending is a real integral position because it's a mental position more than any of the positions on the ice. So they will take this into consideration when they're picking a starter because they need to know the guy's mental outlook. Now, we talked about Robin Lehner and all that. With all the issues he's had, you know, he seems to be handling it, but those demons don't go away, Joe. So maybe he wouldn't be a guy that could handle to carry a young squad and take as many shots. Now, the Islanders weren't really in that avenue. They had very disciplined players, and they played their system to a T, and they always worked hard, had guys that, you know, paid the price. So he would basically get nights off because their defense was gold. It was gold. Their team defense was a lot better. He's not going to have that in Detroit. So it's a twofold situation. Detroit is going to be gauging the personality of the goaltender they bring in, and the goaltender that is shopping around his wares is going to be, you know, looking for that scenario as well. They're going to be saying, well, knowing my personality, what's going to fit my personality? And there's not a lot to – they're going to need a guy that's going to want to come in and be tested early and often.
Right.
So yeah, whoever fits that bill, Talbot might be the guy.
Right. The more we talk about it, if Bernier played well this year, if Yzerman feels like Bernier's a starter, he might be looking at Khudobin as his top pick, someone that can come in and is used to being a backup and a reliable backup.
The split duty.
Yeah, if they're thinking that Bernier could play to the level he did this year, because what was it, the last 2 months of the season before we were on hold, he was like in the top four in all categories other than wins, but yeah. You know, save percentage and goals against average on
very good.
And hardly, you know, I think he was .500 during that time too.
Well, yeah, because no goal support.
Yep.
So I think they should bring in Khudobin. That would be my pick, just for the practicality of it. The sexy pick for me would be Lehner, but based on what I just mentioned, that's a gamble. Might not be a long-term thing, and you don't know when he's going to relapse.
Right.
So, that being said, probably go with the safe bet, take the Dallas goaltender or Talbot, and call it a day, and then hopefully you can land Lafreniere or, one of these other guys that I'm high on in top five.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And continue the rebuild.
Right. All right. We'll see what the Wings do. Howard's out, and someone else will be in, and the NHL will be back soon. With that said, we'll see you back here next time on the lighter side.